This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Skip Stewart, Vice President and Chief Improvement Officer for Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hey, everybody. I'm HF Mason. I'm a General Surgeon and Chief Medical Officer at Baptist Memorial Hospital DeSoto and Chief Quality Officer for the Baptist System.
And hi, everyone. I'm Jake Lancaster. I'm an internal medicine physician and the Chief Medical Information Officer for the Baptist System.
Well, today we are so excited. We are having a return guest come back on, Michael Bungay Stainer. I know many of you are very familiar with his work. When he first came on the podcast in 2023, he talked about his amazing book, How to Work with Almost Anyone. And what we wanted to do in this podcast is do something that's almost impossible, but we're going to give it a try. We're going to talk about two books at once. The book that in some respects is probably the most famous book connected to Michael of all of his books is The Coaching Habit, one that I go to often. And my favorite book, not that anyone's asking for my favorite book, but mine is The Advice Trap. I love that book. There's so many people that know you, Michael. They probably heard that in 2023, you won the Marshall Goldsmith Award for Coaching and Mentoring at Thinkers 50. But for those that maybe don't know you, Michael, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, that's a big question. Here's what's interesting about me. I did a law degree, and I finished my law degree being sued by one of my law professors for defamation. I won a Rhodes Scholarship and went to Oxford, where my only real achievement was A, not becoming a lawyer, but B, falling in love with a Canadian. My first job out of university was in the world of innovation and creativity, and I played very minor roles in two things. One, stuffed crust pizza for Pizza Hut, and secondly, a single malt whiskey, which has been described as the singularly worst single malt whiskey ever invented. I've spent some years in change management, and about 20 years ago, a bit longer, I finally got fired from my last job and realized that I was pretty much unemployable, so started my own company. And from there, have written 8 or 9 books, of which Skip has mentioned a few of them, and a couple of companies, one of which helps people and organizations stay curious longer and really kind of tap into the power of curiosity.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for being with us. And we certainly appreciate your books. We appreciate your energy. But tell us a little bit about the evolution of The Coaching Habit. Was that written out of a need that you saw, or was out of your experiences? Open that up for us a little bit.
When I first moved to Toronto in 2001 and kind of had to start a company because I'd finally been fired, My business plan was to find people with a pulse and a wallet who could employ me, because I had no real business plan at all. I had a random assortment of skills, but no real idea of what problem I'd be solving. And the first couple of years, I did a whole range of stuff, market research, brand positioning, teaching on innovation and creativity, a bunch of stuff that tapped into my experience. And then I had a lucky moment when Nestlé Canada hired me to create a coaching program for them. They wanted to train their managers and leaders to be better coaches, to add that to their managerial and their leadership responsibilities. And this lit a fire in me because, first of all, I saw how coaching was being taught in organizations, and I thought it was being taught terribly. Mostly it was people who taught life coaching and went in and said, we're just going to teach people the same stuff, even though they're fundamentally different, even if they use some of the same mechanics like asking good questions. Secondly, I had an opinion on how it could be different and how it could be better. I had an opinion on how I could unweird coaching so normal people, even surgeons, could go, well, maybe this could be helpful for me. That's a heavy lift. I mean, that was a stretch goal, but I thought I could do other people. And then there was a kind of, I think there's a business model here as well. And so I spent 5 years teaching practical coaching skills to people, trying to make it very centered on the experience of being an overwhelmed professional. Like I've already got a full load. I'm already trying to do too much. I'm already feeling a bit anxious about what it means to manage people because, you know, people are irrational, emotional, messy, unpredictable, chaotic, and I am too. And so I'd had a number of years kind of refining this process. And so I went to a New York publisher who'd published a book of mine. I went, I've got this great idea for a book. It's this encapsulation of all the stuff I've learned. And I went, great, write it. And I wrote it. And they went, we don't like that. Could you go write another book, please? Another version? I was like, oh, okay. So I went and wrote another version. And they're like, yeah, we don't like that either. And I did this 4 or 5 times. So I wrote this book 6 times before I finally went, look, enough. This is the book, take it or leave it. And they left it. They turned me down, which I was shocked by. But it meant that I ended up self-publishing The Coaching Habit. And it meant that when I wrote it for the 7th time, I had a really clear idea of the most elegant expression of what I wanted to teach. One of the reasons it's been a success is that it's a relatively short book. You know, my goal is to write the shortest book I can that's still useful. And through these 5 years, all the excess had been burnt off.
Wow, that's an amazing journey. And, you know, I've recently self-published a book and definitely did not have the success out there that you've had with yours. So
it's coming, though, Jake. You just have to be patient.
Hopefully I'll get up to, I don't know how many copies, about 750,000. Is that what I saw had been sold or something?
Well, probably about twice that now. It's like well over a million. But, Jake, I will say this. I reckon if you can sell more than 5,000 copies of a book, that already puts you into an elite 10%. Most books, 90% of books sell less than 5,000 copies. So it's all about knowing the right metrics to measure yourself against.
Oh, yeah. There's something like 20% sell less than 10 copies. It was a crazy number. But so it was very impressive. And, you know, I don't want to digress too much. But you said something in your intro that I thought was interesting about how coaching leaders or coaching managers on how to remain curious about their work. What do you mean by that? What were you seeing and that made you go in that direction?
I think curiosity is a bit of an underestimated leadership superpower. And curiosity can do 2 things really powerfully. One is it can help you figure out what the real challenge is. Find the real problem that's being done. And as people in the medical profession, you know that part of your job is to actually diagnose the real thing and not the presenting thing, not the thing that the patient thinks they've got because they've gone to Dr. Google and they've done their research. But your job is to go curious and go, how do I actually get to the heart of what's really going on here? But the truth is, that's just true for all of us in the work we do, which is in most organizations, many of us are working very hard, doing the best we can, and working on stuff that's not that important because we haven't figured out the real stuff to work on. And you could say that this is strategy. Strategy is knowing the real stuff to work on. But the other thing about curiosity is it allows you to kind of connect to the other person, get clear about who they are, what their strengths are, how do we bring out the best, how do you help that person really thrive? And in some ways, what that is culture. And, you know, the twin DNA of a successful organization is strategy and culture. Strategy, we know what we're doing. We know what the most important things are to do that will have the most impact and also make us different from our competitors. And culture, we have the best people doing the best they can working on the stuff that matters. And curiosity can unlock and elevate both of those things.
How do you coach somebody to regain their curiosity if they've lost it?
Well, I think this is why Skip likes the Advice Trap book, because in the Advice Trap book, I get into this idea of learning how to tame your advice monster. So the starting point is just to recognize that we are wired to leap in and jump in and offer up opinions and advice. We're advice giving maniacs. I mean, there's a famous study that study that you may well know that shows that general practitioners interrupt their patients within about 15 seconds of the conversation. And I have always felt that was unfair to general practitioners. I just think everybody does. I think everybody is wired to go, the way I add value is I tell people what to do. So I am listening to save them, solve it, fix it, control this conversation. And the starting point, Jake, in terms of building that curiosity muscle, or rather to say learning a behavior, which is, can you stay curious a little bit longer can you rush to action and advice giving a little bit more slowly, which is how I define being more coach-like. It's not about questions. It's just, can you stay curious just a little bit longer? A good starting point is to just start noticing how often you interrupt, how often you jump in, how quickly you stop actually listening to what's being said, and you just keep waiting for the moment for you to actually offer up your opinion, your thought, your suggestion, your idea.
Michael, you know, Jake and I grew up playing sports, and you know, when you think of a coach, I mean, there was no listening, no asking questions. No. It was prescriptive yelling. But, you know, so this is totally counter the opposite of that. It's talking less, being curious, asking questions. And this approach, which I think is awesome, it's the best approach. What are you trying to get out of the person that you're coaching? What is the objective, and what are you trying to do?
You're trying to do two things, one for your benefit, one for their benefit. What you're trying to help them do is become more competent and more confident and more self-sufficient and more autonomous. Literally, when you ask a good question, you see their eyes drift up to the left, because that's what happens when people are figuring out the answer. New neural pathways are actually being created in their brain. Their potential is literally expanding right there in front of you. And as you build that capacity, they become more able to do better work by themselves without you. So you're trying to build that capacity and that confidence and that wisdom in them. And you're also trying to free up your life so you're not doing their work for them. You're not solving their problems for them, because quite frankly, you got enough on your own plate. You got enough juicy, important work for you to be doing without you needing to be doing other people's work for them.
Yeah, now, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And I'll just say to your sports coach analogy, which is very true, like the classic sports coaches, you know, there's mud, go do some push-ups and sit-ups in the mud. There is a place to tell people what to do. That's why my definition of coaching is not only ask questions, it's can you stay curious a little bit longer? Can you rush to action and advice giving a little bit more slowly? And what you'll find at elite level coaching these days is that people are trying to get the players to figure out stuff themselves as much as they can. And then you get to add your little bit or your little twist on top so that you combine empowerment plus the wisdom of the coach.
Yeah, it just seems like that when you're too prescriptive, you're actually holding that person back. You're not allowing them, you're not developing that potential that they already have in them.
Agreed. And quite frankly, half the time you've leapt in too soon, so you haven't actually figured out what the real problem is. And secondly, your advice is actually not as good as you think it is quite often. So half the time, not only are you getting in the way of that other person's potential, but you're offering up slightly crappy advice to solve the wrong problem. It's not a strong leadership act.
Well, HF, you know, I've recently taken on coaching my 5-year-old in soccer, 6-year-old now, and I would say I don't know how much of I have to be pretty prescriptive with that group, because otherwise they're just going to wrestle. But yeah. There's a couple maybe that I could actually love and figure things out on your own.
But even when you're working with a 5-year-old and you go, which foot is it easiest to kick with, your right foot or your left foot? Just these conversations to help them figure some stuff out themselves. And of course, you've got to make them run up and down. You've got to teach them how to kick a ball and be prescriptive about it as well.
Well, I just want them to not touch the ball with their hands. You know, they can use either foot. I don't care. That would be great. My question more is, you know, there's been a lot of books written about management and how to improve management. And almost probably more in this sector than any other business books out there. Why is it so difficult to manage? Why do we need so many, I guess, you know, explanations? Why is it so hard for everybody?
Well, I think it's because people are complex. I mean, people are messy, emotional, irrational, troubled, broken, exuberant, excellent. This is not a machine where you press a button. I mean, you'll know these models of simple, complicated, and complex. Simple being baking a cake, you know, three ingredients, put it in the oven at a certain temperature, mostly you'll get a cake. You know, complicated is potentially, I'm not sure what the right medical metaphor would be, you'll have one, but kind of like launching the space shuttle. It's a lot of spreadsheets, it's a lot of commands, but it is a systematic, logical, do this, do this, do this, and the thing will ignite and the space shuttle will take off. Complex is watching a murmuration, a flock of birds, or raising a child, which is like there's just a bunch of things in a system that emerges. And when you're managing people, you want it to be complicated, meaning I just pull a lever, I just press a button, and they'll do the thing that they're supposed to do. But the relationship between you and that other person is complex. So it means that you have less control than you think. It means that you have more influence than you realize. And part of the power of coaching is it steps away from a false sense of control, but it allows you to actually have greater influence on allowing the best version of that person to emerge.
Michael, you talk about the advice monster that that we all have within us. And I heard you say that we're hard. Why is that? I mean, why? And for some of us, namely me, you know, my monster is like the Jolly Green Giant. The Jolly. I mean, he's huge.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's – and I guess as a surgeon, and I don't know, and I guess any physician, people come to you and the first thing I want to do is, okay, this is what you got to do to get better. Boom, boom, boom. Take this prescription or you need this operation and we'll see you next week in the operating room.
Well, I think there's two answers to that, AKF. One is just a social one, which is we've all been trained all our lives to be the person with the answer. I mean, that is the whole schooling experience. And as medical professionals, you get a whole lot more schooling than all of us. And you're doing tests and you're like, do you know the answer or do you not know the answer? So you've had a lot of practice and got a lot of rewards for being the person with the answer. And of course, there's an expectation also. There's a hierarchy in the way a medical interaction works, which is you go to a doctor because whatever their specialty is, you're expecting them to know some stuff. You're expecting them to have some answers. So there's all of that. But there's a deeper level, I think, a kind of deeper human wiring. And this is what I was trying to get at with the advice monsters, because I talk about these three different advice monsters. There's tell it, save it, and control it. And these talk about, you could call ego states, where you're like, this is how you protect yourself. This is how you don't stay vulnerable. You know, tell it is like, my job is to have all the answers. And unless I have all the answers, I'm not doing my job. I'm somehow deficient. You know, save it is my job is to protect everybody, save everybody, keep everybody safe no matter what. If anybody struggles or stumbles or finds it hard, I failed. And then control it is like, my job is to keep my hands on the steering wheel. But otherwise, the chaos of the future will come in and sweep us all aside, and then I will have failed. So we've got a lot of unlearning to do. And then there's a certain amount of self-work to go, well, what am I holding on to? And what status am I holding on to? And what need for certainty am I holding on to? Because when you tell somebody what to do, if you give them some advice, even if you're wrong, it feels pretty good. Look at me. I'm adding value. I've got status. I've got control. I've got authority. We can wrap this thing up and you can go off and I can get on with all the other stuff I have to do. When you ask a question, there's this moment of ambiguity. You're like, was it a good question? Will they have an answer? Will they have a sane answer? What happens if they have an insane answer? What happens if they go off on a path I don't even know? What if the conversation has gone off the rails? And so you're giving up status and control and certainty in this generous act of staying curious for hopefully the bigger win, which is to give this person competence, confidence, autonomy, self-sufficiency.
Michael, do you draw a distinction between, or should we act differently when we're giving advice when the the person asks for advice versus maybe unsolicited encounters where you feel you should give advice? How should those differences play into effect?
I think it depends absolutely and entirely on the situation. Like if the hospital is burning down and somebody comes up to you and says, "Where's the exit?" You're not going to be going, "Well, how do you feel about smoke?" You're going to be giving them some very specific guidance around that. I think the secret, Jake, is just to go, what choice am I making? Because when you default to giving advice, it might be there are times you're missing where curiosity might be the thing. So I have a script, something I practiced and now it's kind of become a habit, which is like when somebody asks me for advice, and remember, I don't have the same status and the same job that both of you have, so it's different. But when somebody comes to ask me for advice, I will say, "That's a great question. I do have some advice. I've got some thoughts. But before I give you my advice, tell me what you've already thought of. What ideas have you already come up with?" And they'll go, "Great. And what else have you thought of? Great. And what else have you thought of?" And then hopefully I'll give them a thing that they haven't thought of just to make sure they know that I'm the smartest person in the conversation and I'm still helping them out with that. So I think it depends entirely on this interaction. The importance is, are you making a choice to give advice or to stay curious? Or is it just your default reaction, which is like, I always just give advice when anybody asks it of me.
Michael, you mentioned something. You said that you have a script that you follow and it has become a habit. Mm. And on this podcast, we talk about skills. Yeah. And, you know, this, you know, obviously this method of being curious and asking questions, to some people, their personality is more wired for that. It's a little bit easier, but for other people, it may, like me, it's not. Yeah. But it is a skill that can be learned and practiced and improved. And I know the first answer is going to be, the first thing is people need to go out and buy your book. But for somebody who's just wanting to start, well, how can I get better today? If I listen to this podcast and I want to go out and do something today, how could I get better? What would be the one thing that you might tell our audience?
Well, okay, let me ask you a question. You know, you've seen yourself as somebody who's particularly great at giving advice.
Sure.
You understand some of the power of being more coach-like and staying curious. What advice would you give yourself in terms of how you would build this habit, build this practice of staying curious? Where would you start?
For me, it would be just like you said, it's a lot of times in conversations with people, you know, just barely when they've started talking, I'm already thinking about my response of what I'm going to say, and I'm waiting for them just to slow down. And I'm thinking, I wish they would be quiet so I can talk. So for me,
exactly,
it would be, okay, check yourself, you know, realize that's what I'm doing, and pause and really listen. And that's something that I would have to truly, truly concentrate on.
So if I was going to add to that great insight you've already got, I would add a couple of things. One is, if there are people close to you on your team or in your family or just in your circle, you might actively enroll them in the help. It's like, I am trying to interrupt a little less. I am trying to give a little less advice. If you notice me doing that, could you just give me a nod or a wave or a safe word or something, just so I get more aware of it? Because I'm just trying to get more aware of it. So enroll some people to help you. Secondly, you know, in the Coaching Habit book, there are kind of 7 core questions. You know, and that's a number one stage I had 5, one stage I had 108. I went back and forth and I was like, actually, I think with these 7, you get a long way down the path. I might pick one of the questions and pick one person and pick one regular interaction and go, how do I start building the habit with that person? Because what's really overwhelming is to go, I just need to be more coach-like all the time. That's impossible. You can only fail at that. But if you said, when I'm hanging out with Jake and we're in conversation on our weekly one-to-one conversation, I'm going to try and ask this one question at least once. that feels like you might take it on. And then you can pick one of the seven questions. It could be as simple as, and what else? Which is like, you know, in the book I say it's the best coaching question in the world because it adds to every other question. You could pick the learning question, the seventh question, which is what was helpful or what was useful in this conversation for you?
My favorite other than what else is, you know, what's the real challenge for you here? That's one that really jumped out at me that I think I could take and use.
Perfect. Yeah. I think that's a really powerful one. That is a real, that kind of unlocks all sorts of good things. I do like that learning question. What was useful or valuable, most useful or most valuable about this conversation for you? Because that not only practices your coaching muscle, but it keeps you refining the relationships you're in. Every working relationship will get better if at the end of every interaction you go, what was helpful about this for you? Because not only will they start realizing how helpful you are, HF, but you'll start realizing the things you're doing that are useful and the things you're doing that are less useful, and you'll adjust your behavior to that as well.
That's really interesting. I want to go back to, you know, maybe the physician-patient relationship, but this really is going to apply to anybody that's coming to you for advice. Sometimes, not infrequently, the patient will come wanting you to tell them something. For instance, I'll often get patients that come in with a cold and they want me to tell them that they have a sinus infection and give them an antibiotic. They know what is wrong, even if my real advice would be just give it a few days. You don't need an antibiotic for this. But often, you know, people will come to you with wanting your advice, but really wanting you to say something very specific or confirm what they believe. How should we adapt in those situations?
What have you found that works best for you, Jake, so far?
Honestly, it really depends on the person. Some are pretty adamant that that is what they have. And, you know, it would take a lot of my time to try to persuade them otherwise. And a lot of times you were not able to persuade them otherwise. So it can be very difficult, and, you know, it's very frustrating. Can be very frustrating on our side because.
I can imagine.
Yeah. So I don't have. You know, sometimes the easy button is just to give them what they want. Yeah. But even though, you know, that's the wrong thing to do.
Give them the pink stuff. That's what the mom wants.
Yep.
So the first, I want to answer that. I've got a thought. I'm going to give you my thought. It may not be useful at all, but just notice with both of your questions how I sidestepped giving advice. Like both of them, I was like, yeah, good question. Really interesting. What do you think? And you're like, I'm glad you asked. And you both had some thoughts and you both were willing to respond. This is me being more coach-like. I'm not really coaching either of you. I'm just staying curious longer because it's helpful for me, for instance, to know, Jake, what you've already tried out so that I don't suggest it as advice. Because you're like, yeah, I already thought of that, Michael. You're clearing the brush for me so that I can actually try and find something useful that you haven't figured out for yourself. And, you know, this is not my world, so my advice is probably terrible here. But certainly I think you have to decide which battles are worth fighting. And I'm sure with some people you're like this. All this conversation ends up in is a tussle of control and power. And I don't have time or the psychic energy for that every single day with every single patient. I'd be curious to know if you ask the question, and what do you want from this interaction with me? It's a really powerful question. Often people aren't that good at being explicit about what they want, but what that does is at least makes it really clear the interaction. Because if you go, people come in and you'll go, how are you doing? What's wrong with you? They're like, let me tell you. And if you go, great, okay, I understand that. And what do you want from me in this interaction? Sometimes they're like, I just need to tell somebody that I'm feeling crappy. And they're like, great, I hear you. Yeah, that must be miserable. Thank you. See you later. Sometimes they're like, I need this medicine because I've researched it and this is definitely the medicine I need. And you're like, oh, that's interesting. that might be the thing. But let me ask you some other questions, because it may not be that's not the only option that we have here. Sometimes they're like, I don't know what I want. I just want to feel better. And you're like, okay, great. And so that question, what do you want, can help make explicit what is otherwise implicit, and can maybe short circuit some of the shenanigans that otherwise the games that are getting played. I don't know. How does that land with you, Jake? Does that feel useful at all, or is that just kind of make believe?
I do think that can be maybe a version of that used, because sometimes I will discover, you know, this, I think this patient's coming to me just for this medicine. And after a discussion, I find that I was able to persuade them otherwise more easily than I anticipated. So asking them what they expect out of the encounter could work. It may be something to try.
I know that I would be happier with my medical professionals if they actually knew what I wanted, rather than just assume that they knew what I wanted and assume that because I had this thing going on with me, that what I wanted was that thing. And I think there's often an assumption that this, therefore that. And sometimes just you hearing what I want, you're like, yep, that's what I thought you'd want. But it just allows me to be seen and heard, which means that I'm going to be more open to whatever suggestions you might have for me.
What's interesting about that one, Michael, is, and I may be wrong about this, just thinking out loud, is that feels very much like what Ed Schein used to call a process inquiry question.
Right.
In other words, you're, you know, it's a simple way of saying that is sometimes just saying, hey, are we okay here? You know,
yeah.
You know, and I like that question, because even though it can feel that you were talking to Jake about, even though it could feel a little awkward, if it's delivered correctly, it could cut through the gamesmanship that's going on, you know.
Right.
So I have one question. I know we're coming to the end of the podcast, but there's no way I'm going to let Michael Bungay Stainer get away without at least giving him his thoughts on this. So this has been one of my recent discoveries, is I have direct reports that are working on certain initiatives, and we have cadences set up to where they're coming to me on a certain format and explaining kind of where we're going, where we're at, you know, so on and so forth. And one of the things I discovered about myself recently, and I'd love to hear your reflections on this, is it wasn't moving along like I wanted it to. And I know it was creating a lot of frustration in me. And then when you have that frustration, you can jump to all kinds of conclusions and assumptions. Yeah. And then the last meeting that we had, even though I had 50 questions, I asked two. And afterwards, my team was very surprised. And one of them approached me and said, is that how you expected that meeting to go? I said, yeah, I think so. I said, but why do you ask? And they said, well, we were expecting a lot more questions from you.
Mm.
I said, don't mistake me asking a few questions that I didn't have more questions.
Right.
I said, but here's what I've learned about myself. And I told this individual that I've learned that with certain individuals, when I machine gun the questions at someone, I freeze them in place. And then there's no movement forward at all. And this individual, I appreciated his comment. He said, actually, I think you're right. I said, well, tell me more. And he said, I walk away thinking, obviously, I did not think this thing out very well, because Skip just threw 30 questions at me.
Right.
Can you resonate with that? Or have you ever had an experience like that?
Yeah. So part of the power of coaching is that can dismantle some degree of the hierarchy that exists between people. When you stay curious, when you ask a question and you allow the other person to come up with an answer, it actually raises their status and it lowers your status. When you're the person with all the answers, you have high status in the relationship. However, when you're asking a series of questions and it's kind of like a drive-by shooting, you know, but through questioning, you've got the high status because you're like, I'm investigating this to get to the bottom of what's really going on. And so it can kind of shift the dynamic. And when people are in that low status, they have that somatic reaction, you know, fight or flight. So that's that freezing that you're talking about. What I hear, Skip, and I'm making this up a little bit, is when you've got that thing going on and you kind of can feel the turmoil and the frustration around it, I use a model from nonviolent communication, Marshall Rosenberg's work. And it says, look, all that stuff in your head can go into four different buckets. There's the data, there's the feelings and the judgments, and then there's what you want and what you need. So the data are the facts of the situation. There's always far fewer facts than you think there will be. Your feelings are how you're emotionally responding to the situation. And I use a template of five, although there are different templates out there. I use mad, sad, glad, ashamed, and afraid. That kind of covers a fair amount of the spectrum. There are judgments, your opinions, your interpretation of all the stuff that's going on, often connected to a feeling, but you'll have judgments about the other people. You'll have judgments about the project overall. You'll have judgments about your role in the mess. I'm feeling frustrated because this is way overdue. I'm feeling angry because the leader of this project sucks. I'm feeling sad because my boss is harassing me because of the lateness of this project. That's all feeling judgment combinations. And then there's what you want or what you need. And we've talked about the power of this question before. But once you figure out what you want, the questions that are truly useful to ask become much more apparent. And often we launch into these conversations without knowing what we want. And therefore, we're doing the drive-by shooting because we're questioning, because we're just trying to figure all of that stuff out. And it sounds to me that in a sense, you got clear on A, your own patterns of behavior, very helpful. But also, actually, what's the win I want from this meeting? What do I really want? And it's not to have people be defensive. It's like they need to figure out how to get this back on track. And that makes it a much more kind of, if you'll pardon the pun, a much more surgical intervention in that conversation.
Really helpful, really helpful. Well, Michael, thank you so much for coming on a second time, and I'm sure we'll ask a third time in the future, but you have always been so kind and so gracious with your time, and thank you so much for not only the work that you do, but your willingness to come on, and we're so grateful for you. And just on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare, just thank you so much, my friend. I really appreciate you coming on today's podcast.
It's my pleasure. Thanks, Skip. Thanks, Jake.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jake. Nice to see you all again. Take care. Bye-bye.